You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 576 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Fosma Moon.
Good morning.
Have you dug out yet?
Oh, dude, most of the snow's gone. We had 60-degree weather yesterday.
It's
wild to think that there was 18 inches of snow on the ground 6 days ago.
Are y'all still going to get more?
Nothing that's going to stick. It's supposed to snow this week, but it's supposed to be above freezing. So, yeah, it'll just wear off.
We shall see, right?
Exactly.
So we reported on Hyatt and the social experiment that was posted. And now it seems like, yeah, it was a social experiment, but maybe that person had some insider information because Hyatt has made some changes.
Well, but this time every year, Hyatt makes changes.
Okay. So they just kind of used the idea that they always make changes around this time.
Yeah. Every year, hotels get recategorized. Things move around. It's not great. There's a lot of increases in each category. There's some decreases, but the decreases are far smaller than the increases.
Gotcha. And so they've added new categories? Is that correct?
I don't think they added new categories. I think the existing categories all went up.
Okay. So new prices on the categories.
Yeah. Cause it's a range now. And hotels can, during peak times, hotels can charge more.
Okay. So the hotel can say, we want to get paid more from Hyatt for these rooms.
Yes.
Okay. What else has changed?
I think that was it.
Really?
Oh, there's one more thing. Globalists and Explorists will get access to award inventory 1 month sooner.
Oh, interesting. So you can book a hotel 13 months out, potentially?
Yes, potentially. That is the intent.
Okay. I thought I saw something about how some of there's like more availability potentially for rooms because they have like tiers within their rewards or dynamic, let's call it dynamic pricing. Is that the case or did I just misread that?
I don't know. Honestly, okay. I would say those kinds of things will have better insight once they're implemented.
Okay.
Right. It's easy to promise something unless if you can't deliver it, what's the point of promising it?
Yeah. So to be clear, let's see here. This is from 3 days ago. They are implementing, instead of it being a off-peak, standard, and peak pricing, they're going to have lowest, low, moderate, upper, and top, right? Isn't that the way the awards are? So they're not adding, it's new tiers, but they're adding...
they're adding tiers within the categories.
Within the categories, that's right, yep. And those rates have gone up from what they would have been the current award chart, so not surprising there.
Is anything surprising anymore?
No, that's the problem. What does this mean, though? I think, you know, a lot of people use Hyatt. They keep points in, you know, Chase or whatever, and then they transfer them to Hyatt because it's actually a really good redemption. Like, do you think that stays? Is that still a really good redemption? Is it still a good call?
Maybe. Right? Like, one of the challenges with Hyatt is they are not everywhere.
Yep.
And so... like, it's like anything, it's like picking an airline, right? You have to pick one that works to what you need. It's pointless to pick an airline that doesn't work for where you are.
Yeah.
Right. Same thing with hotels. If you need to go somewhere and Hyatt's, like the places you go, Hyatt's are only there half the time, it might not be a good use of points.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've talked about it here on the show before is that I have coworkers who, they love Hilton. And I think they love Hilton because Hilton is everywhere.
Right. Safety with Marriott.
Yeah, Marriott. I think Marriott a slightly lesser extent, but Marriott's mostly everywhere. But Hyatt is definitely not there yet. And I don't know if Hyatt will ever be.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think they ever will be.
They're always going to be somewhat of a niche or smaller, like smaller markets are what they avoid, I feel like.
I don't think they're avoiding them. I think they're trying to grow in them. But remember, the challenge is, right, all these hotel chains, Hilton, Marriott, they're mostly franchised.
Yep.
If you're a franchisee, why would you pick Hyatt over Marriott or Hilton knowing the ubiquity that Hilton or Marriott bring?
yep.
into an emerging market.
Mm.
Right. Because you're at that point, you're taking on more risk because the potential customer base will always be bigger with Hilton or Marriott.
Fair. So if you're like in a smaller market, you're like, okay, I'm going to open a, you know, Four Points or a Hampton Inn or whatever it is.
Right.
And because, what I, because it has so much more potential customers.
Right. And so what Hyatt needs to do is incentivize opening in smaller markets. And I think they are, but I don't know if they're doing enough.
Yeah. I mean, they really only have one. They really only have one brand that can do that. They can do that with right now. I mean, I guess they've bought a couple of brands that they can do that with. But Hyatt Place is the brand, right?
Well, that's not true. Hyatt Place, Hyatt House, and Hyatt Studios. Because remember, that's the new brand is the Studios.
That's true. But have we seen that built anywhere?
There's one in Mobile, Alabama, and I think one in Southwest Virginia.
Okay. So if they grew that, that would be, I mean, that's potentially a great fit. I mean, that if that competes directly with like a Hampton or a, you know, anything like that, that would be awesome.
I think they are trying to grow it, but I don't know if they're being aggressive enough.
Yeah. Yeah. What else we got? Let's talk about Qantas. Announced they're going to fly to Las Vegas.
Seems odd. Three times a week. Starts at the end of December. Goes through March.
What kind of plane? 787?
789.
It is odd. I mean, I question it. I mean, I have friends that are Australian. You have friends that are Australian. I don't think there's a lot of Australians coming to the United States right now.
You wouldn't think that by the fares, though.
Well, maybe that's just it. Maybe that's like there's enough of like a small group of Australians who like to gamble that much that this flight makes sense.
Well, okay. So part of it makes sense. Its start date makes sense for CES. Right? End of December, you're already taking a schlep up to Vegas for CES. You might as well add a couple extra days.
Yeah.
Right? Makes sense. But February being like late January, February being low season, I don't know what the point is.
And that's, I mean, I guess it's nicer weather than Australia during their summer.
I think it depends where you are in Australia though, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's pretty hot in like Melbourne and Sydney at those times.
Yeah, but like you've just come out of winter.
Fair enough. But you're going to 80s, 70s, 80s in Las Vegas?
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there is like the slang, what is it, the pokies? That's what they call them in Australia, the poker machines. There's a whole culture around that. So, I don't know, the CES part makes sense. How long does it run? Just through our winter?
Yeah, northern winter, so it ends at the end of March.
And then it's done, huh?
Yeah.
That's a weird one. I mean, for the people who are trying to do CES, like, we've seen Korean, they launch their, like, what is it, four flights that they do or 1 week of flights that they do for just for CES, and then they don't fly that route. And American does a one-off. And
American this year did London and Tokyo.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, like, one-offs. So Qantas could clearly, if it was just about CES, they could run one-offs for CES.
No, I don't think it's just CES, but I think that might have been part of the rationalization of how to justify.
Like they had nowhere else to send a 789.
Well, I don't know.
Because if they're running it every other day, doesn't that require two frames then?
No. Not every other day. If they were doing it every day, they would require two frames, but not if they're alternating.
Okay. What about timing for this? Like, when does it get into Vegas? Or what time does it leave Sydney and get into Vegas?
I actually haven't even looked. Last time I looked, it hadn't been posted yet.
Okay. Let me look.
I think it starts December 29th.
Let's see here. Yeah, it starts December 29th. Operate Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays, and we'll go through March 12th.
So not quite full winter season.
Leaves.
Oh, this is interesting. It leaves Sydney at 9 p.m.
That's a nice late departure.
Gets into Vegas at 4 p.m., 3:55 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
which is unusual because like all the flights normally leave in the morning. And the return leaves at 8:20 p.m., which again is unusual.
Yeah, that's early.
And lands at 6:35 a.m. So it's a very quick turn.
Yeah. So the plane doesn't sit there very long. And it's great for a cruise, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's see. I mean, they did get a Las Vegas was offering, or they offer currently $3 million in annual airport fee waivers to incentivize new service.
So maybe that's what's going on?
And they said, hey, let's just, we can take the $3 million, take a gamble, see what happens.
I mean, right, if demand is truly low across the board, why not throw a 7-8 and make $3 million on it?
Yeah.
Knowing you'll get a bunch of premium traffic for CES. And at that point, you're only running it for an extra 2 months.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, could they have just run service to Phoenix rather than Vegas to connect to American?
But Phoenix probably isn't giving them $3 million.
No, that's fair. I'm from an actual logistics point of view and like moving people, it's like not having to put people through LAX seems like a win for me.
But they can push people through Dallas.
True. I guess that's nicer than Phoenix too, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's been a long time since I've actually connected in Phoenix.
I did it a few months ago. Don't recommend it.
Better? No, it's still like all spread out and not great.
I mean, so it's gotten a little better in that a bunch of the stuff is interconnected now. Whereas, like, so it used to be the north and south sides were not connected.
Yeah, and yet
so you'd have to go. So they are connected. But, like, I attempted to go to the Chase Lounge, which is a bad, bad choice.
Not good? Not a good lounge?
They put it in the Southwest Terminal. So the clientele is questionable to begin with, but the wait was like an hour and a half. I'm like, yeah, I'm out. I'll just go find a corner and sit somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's the American has not put any money into Phoenix. That is very obvious.
Yeah.
The lounge was an old America West lounge, and I don't think it's changed since American merged with US Air.
Wow. Okay. That's not great for them.
Yeah.
And then you had noted in here United chain card change thoughts. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I was reading some stuff, and I think part of what's driving United, and be it they're being approaching this in a very silly method, is that of the three major carriers, they are making the least amount of money from their credit card partnership.
Mm-hmm. You got that from what, their 10K or what?
Yeah, it's for looking at some of the 10Ks for the three carriers, right? And so even AA is beating them at that. Like, think about that for a second.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah. But the reality is, like, you know, I'm not even going to talk about Delta because I never understand Delta. AA's miles are far more valuable than United miles, contrary to what United thinks.
Mm.
And AA's award chart is also, or well, I shouldn't say award chart because there's no chart, but award pricing is much more reasonable than United pricing.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that naturally would make the miles more valuable. And I think that's the part of the lesson that United is missing, is that they've devalued everything so much that why do people want to earn a currency that they keep devaluing on a clip?
Well, I think it's a conundrum, right? Like, if you make things more expensive, you're not, I think United doesn't understand economics. Like, it's making something more expensive does not increase the value of the currency. Like, it increases the need for the currency, but that's not the value of the currency. And I think that's a differentiator. That's like there's a difference there between those two things, right? If you requires you more money to go out and buy something, that is not an increase in value. But I think United views it that way. Like, they're like, well, we made it more expensive. These are more valuable now because you need more of them to go do the thing. No, you've done the opposite. You've made it more expensive. It's less valuable to the user. It's more valuable to United. It's less valuable to the user.
The problem is the United approached this in a way where they would force Chase to buy more miles by increasing the costs rather than making the miles more desirable.
Yeah, exactly. Increasing value would mean making it easier to book something at a reasonable rate. That's more value. And if you do that, more people will use your card. More people will want your miles. Yeah. This is basic economics 101.
Like, we'll talk more about our upcoming trip, but I used AA miles to book a J ticket from De Gaulle to Colombo for 42,500 miles.
Yeah.
In J.
Good luck doing that on United.
Yeah, exactly. good luck finding space on Star, right? Like, United has done itself a disservice by and Star as a whole by making award inventory so hard across the entire lines. But beyond that, United's been actively re-engaged with StarNet blocking. So there's a lot of things that are opening up that United will not sell you, even though they're available on StarNet.
Yeah, it's interesting because you'll find things on like ANA
right,
that are open on other carriers, and United does not have access to them and does not see that availability.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely happening again. And it's this thing of like, oh, if we create scarcity, it will create value. That's not how scarcity works. So yeah. Anyway, let's talk about United's contract of carriage changes.
So United made some quiet changes to the contract of carriage recently, which targets throwaway ticketing and hidden city ticketing. And it used to be the verbiage was buying round trip tickets is circumventing, but now they're making it sound like any tickets that you buy that could potentially circumvent fares, they can target.
Sorry. But how so? Like, how could a one way circumvent things? Like, that's the point of a one way, is that I'm actually paying for a one way fare to get somewhere.
Right. But say, you know, like you buy Tokyo to the US as a round trip ticket.
Yeah.
And then inside that, you buy a bunch of one-way tickets. Now they're setting it up such that they could come back and say, well, you're circumventing the fare, even though they have no way to price all the things you would be doing.
Yeah, that's probably part of the reason people do this, is because United can't actually price the fare that you want.
Right.
Or it meets some maximum mileage cap or whatever it is.
Well, there's a number of things, right? You can, there's only a certain number of coupons you can have per ticket. I can't remember if it's 10 or 20.
I think it's 20, but it might have changed. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, if you fly from Tokyo to the US and you're scheduled to fly back 8 months later, but you do more than 18 flights in the time you're in the US, or if you take a connection from Tokyo, right, you're down to less than 18. They don't have a way to price or ticket that.
I mean, yeah. And then there's this thing of like, is as a traveler, how can you know this? Like, okay, I know I need to be in Tokyo, or I'm coming from Tokyo to the United States, you know, in 6 months, and then I need to go back to Tokyo again. I'll make it a round trip, but it's going to be in 12 months is when I do that. And so I book at the end of the schedule, and then I book other things inside of it because that's what my schedule needs. Like, right. What do? I call United and say, hey, can you add this on? And then you get some egregious price of like $80,000 for domestic flights or something stupid. It strikes me as like United is trying to shut down a specific set of use cases where people are trying to circumvent things.
Sir, you'd like to add a segment from Chicago LaGuardia? Yes. That'll be a $47,000 ad collect.
There's a change fee. $250, sir. Oh, well, I can't do it because of the change fee. So I don't know. It just feels like they're using like a sledgehammer to fix a problem with a mounting nail. Like,
this is this is clearly coming as a result of someone abusing things, and rather than addressing the problem, people, they're trying to put a blanket policy out there.
Yeah. And it was funny because they removed the language around round trip tickets specifically,
right,
on the throwaway ticketing or on the end-on-end ticketing. Which I also found interesting. It's like, okay, but a one-way is always end-on-end because it's a one-way. So I don't know why we need that language in there. But anyway, they also changed the rules on e-cigarettes, like vapes, and batteries, like
battery packs.
Battery packs. Like basically saying the battery pack can't go in the overhead, and the same thing with the vapes. So are you just supposed to hold your vape?
Well, what do you do if you sit in the bulkhead?
That's what I mean. Like, are you just supposed to hold it?
I mean, isn't that encouraging use at that point?
That's great. Yeah, that's what we need. It's like saying, well, there's no personal liquor can go in the overhead bin, but please don't drink your own liquor.
Please hold on to this bottle through the entire flight, but don't drink it now.
Yeah, even if it's open, don't drink it. It's weird. I mean, I get the battery pack thing. They don't want this. I guess it's the same with the e-cigarettes. They don't want them catching fire and like being in the overhead bin, but it's like, okay, do I want it to catch fire under my seat? Like, I don't,
I think that I understand the intent. I think this is probably driven by a series of incidents.
Yes.
Right. And so what they want is visibility, right? You are more likely to catch it if it's smoking in front of you
than it is if it's above in the overhead.
And it is above you.
Yeah.
And I think they're just trying to get ahead of the inevitable problems that these things are going to cause.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Middle East. It's been a crazy 3 days.
It's been 3 days or 2 days. I think
I've lost all concept of time.
We're recording on Sunday.
We're recording on Sunday on Friday. Was it Friday night?
Friday night, Saturday morning.
The U.S. and Israel launched strikes against Iran. This essentially closed a bunch of airspace. Initially, it only closed like Kuwaiti, Iraqi, and Iranian airspace initially. And then quickly thereafter, all Middle East airspace, except Saudi Arabia, I think, and Oman, closed. So a bunch of flights turned back. Flights that were coming from the U.S. to places like Qatar or Dubai or Abu Dhabi went back to the United States. Flights coming from Europe returned to Europe. Flights going to Europe turned around and went back to their home bases. There was a lot. There was a lot going on in the middle of the night. What were you going to make a comment? Or no?
No, I don't know.
We were letting you explain. Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of stuff was turning around. And as of today, Qatar, Abu Dhabi, Bahrain, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, they all remain closed. Those airports are closed because Dubai actually got hit twice.
And Abu Dhabi.
And Abu Dhabi. Qatar's, and I mean the airports at these places got hit. And then Qatar's airport has not been hit, but the air base and part of the town has been hit. So it's kind of hard to tell what's actually going on. And they keep saying they're going to have updates. I think Qatar's next update is tomorrow at 9 a.m. UTC, which is Sunday night for us. So we won't really know what's going on. Foz and I were supposed to be coming back through Doha next week on the 6th.
Well, I'm supposed to fly through Abu Dhabi on the way there.
Oh, are you? I thought you were going Paris to Colombo.
Via Abu Dhabi.
Oh, I thought you were just taking the nonstop on Sri Lanka.
No, I couldn't get that.
So what's your back? Okay, so then what's your backup plan?
I don't know yet. I haven't been able to find a backup plan is the problem.
So all this is going sideways. Like we're going to Colombo and then we're coming back through the Middle East. I'm going via Singapore, which right now is, I'm doing the Newark Singapore flight, which is as of right now still operating. They're kind of like all going to the north of Iran down through Asia. Those European flights. So that still looks like it's a possibility. I think if the winds change or anything kind of goes weird with that, then that potentially cancels or makes like a technical stop in Hong Kong or something. So I don't know. This is all a mess. And Qatar has been very unclear about like what they're trying to do. And there's been reports of people having issues getting refunds, getting changes, doing anything. Just getting through on the phone has been near impossible for them. So I don't know. What do you think, Fuzz?
I honestly don't know what to make of any of this.
Like, I feel like they're like, oh, well, when the U.S. government and the Israeli government tells us it's fine and it's safe, we'll reopen our airspace. But it's like, okay, but what about the Iranians? Like, is anyone calling them and be like, you guys got to do a strike? Like, you guys going to shoot anything down that flies over your airspace? Because, like, both Qatar and Emirates and I think even Abu Dhabi have flights that cross Iranian airspace because they need the airspace to make the most efficient routing.
Yeah, they all do.
Yeah. I mean, Miami goes through North Africa. Like, the flight we're on uses North Africa. But, like, everything else uses Iranian airspace.
But, like, they can go south, right? All the planes, pretty much all the planes they're using have the range to go south and take a slightly longer routing.
Yeah.
That's
if they can get the airspace open. Like, their own.
Yeah, if they can get their own airspace open, as long as they can get to Saudi Arabia, they're fine.
So this has just caused a bit of a headache. I would love to hear from listeners for whom this has caused a bit of a headache. I don't really know what to do at this point. Like we've been chatting. You and I have been in text chats trying to figure this out a little bit, but we haven't really sorted it out. So we should probably sort it out on the show. Let's air our laundry on the show, Fuzz.
Well, I mean, United has now canceled Newark to buy through Tuesday. So I think it's just a matter of time before Wednesday and Thursday get canceled.
Yeah.
Which at that point means the airports won't be open.
Yep.
And then, like, I guess the bigger question is, like, for me, it's easy. I can undo all of my stuff reasonably easily. You're the one with the expiring Singapore miles.
Yeah. They have to rebook me on something that's like months out. The question is, do I just go to Singapore and come back from Singapore?
That is an option as well.
Yeah. Little happy birthday to me trip.
Or do I just go to Singapore and come hang out with you for a day and two and come back? We could go have lime juice.
We could go have lime juice.
And biryani.
Why'd you come here? Well, to drink lime juice. It's a good thing they don't have passport control with people at it anymore. You're nuts, sir.
How long were you here? A day.
You're insane. We could do that. I don't know a way to get back. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, that is the wild card.
Honestly, I was willing to go all the way to Colombo if Qatar would push me back east. There's I can't find anything. It's all like, oh, you can go Colombo, Hong Kong, but there's nothing from Hong Kong back on Cathay that I can find.
But it's not a Qatar ticket, though, bro.
We're on an American ticket?
Yeah.
So can we call American, I guess, is the big question.
That's, in theory, yes.
Okay, and we're set to go. We're supposed to go back to Florida on this ticket.
Yes.
Do we have to? Can they make a change? Because that's the real problem.
I don't know. I don't know. We would have to find out.
Yeah. So this is what we're dealing with right now. I mean, for me, it's hard to believe there's any way to make this work. I think space is dried up, so we'll see. I'm Foz is always optimistic and I'm always the pessimist, so
we'll see. Like, I was talking to one of our friends last night who's also supposed to be in Colombo later this week, or is supposed to go to Colombo soon, and he's on United, and like, United won't do anything really. Like, we can get you to Dubai, but that doesn't really help him.
And okay, so that gets him to Dubai, which is also closed. Like, thanks.
And my guidance to him was, wait till it cancels, because that opens up a lot more options.
Yeah. Just like the question of like, and that's the thing with Qatar is like, some of the flights they've been saying, oh, it's going to operate. And same with Emirates. They've been like, oh, it's got to operate. And then it doesn't cancel until well past departure time. And so people are like, okay, I'm stuck. I can't do anything. And well, so, this is obvious. There's no plane here. It never.
How are they expecting to operate it if they don't have open airspace?
I don't know. Like, I don't know why it's not a blanket cancellation of everything. There's got to be a reason. So anyway, we're waxing poetic for folks, but yeah. What else we got? Oh, we're going to make this a somewhat short show. We're going to talk about Chicago O'Hare. In the boat. So if you're a Patreon supporter, stick around for that. If not, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We will talk to you next time. Happy travel.
Take care.